Welcome, spooky people. This week we're doing something a little bit different. This is going to be the first ever live recorded episode of the Ghost Box podcast. So, recently I was invited to do a little lecture, a little speech at the Emory County Paranormal Convention. And afterwards I hosted a ghost open mic where lots of different people from the room got to get up and tell their ghost stories. So, that is what you're going to hear today. Now, we did our best to record this on site, but whenever you're recording live, you can't always control the conditions, you can't always control the technology, so bear with a different quality of audio than you're used to hearing, but I can promise you the stories in this episode are well worth it. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy this live episode of the Ghost Box.
Right, so at the Museum of the Santa Fe, we have three sections. We have a paleontology hall, we have an archaeology hall, and we now have the Pioneer Hall. And Megan can attest to that. Megan over there, wait for Megan. We had a situation where we had to move our Pioneer Museum into the main museum. And we had known prior to this that we had ghosts, but they're friendly ghosts. We've had one or two malicious. We had one very malicious lady, but I'm not going to talk about her tonight. We started moving stuff from the Pioneer building into the new building, which it was 1994, so not that new, into that building, and the energy in the museum picked up, you could feel it. Didn't matter who came in, you could feel that energy, and we were very, very, very knowledgeable in, the understanding that we would probably have issues with the Native Americans and the white people. And we did. So for the first little while, things would get moved around. I had a piece of candy come up missing. It was good chocolate. It was a really good piece of chocolate. I'd been saving it for the next day. I went home, I came back, and it was gone. My wrapper was there. Now, of course, I'm like, it was probably the maintenance man when he hadn't been in. We come in at the same time. Chocolate was gone. Megan's earphones kept getting moved around. It was little tiny things like this kept happening. And eventually, it got so that you could hear things going. You could hear knocking. Our back door would knock, 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 knock. So we'd go to the back door. Maybe it was Karen. Maybe somebody who needed in. Nobody's there. And they kept doing it, knock, knock, knock. And this happened quite frequently. One day, when we were trying to prepare, we were getting ready for a Smithsonian exhibit, and it just felt really loud. There was nothing for me to say. There wasn't loud music playing. There wasn't loud people in the building. It just got really loud, and I got really frustrated because we were trying to focus, and I'm like, everybody stop it right now! And the energy level went, poof. They calmed it down. Now, we have those same spirits in there, but we know kind of who they are now. And they all stay in their separate rooms. So the Native Americans stay in the archaeology hall, and the pioneers, or whoever it is, stay in the pioneer hall. We've had experiences with footsteps on the roof. Nancy can attest to that. She's in the other room. It was a Friday. It was just me and Nancy, and we heard someone on the roof. I thought it was the maintenance man coming to get snow off the roof, so I went upstairs to go see what he was doing. There's not a soul up there. The light was off. Just smiled and went back down the steps and looked out the back door to make sure he didn't go up the ladder onto our roof because that's quite dangerous. Nobody up there either. So I came in and sat down and looked at Nancy, and she goes, nobody there? Nobody there. We're like, okay. We just continue on. It's become normal to us. We just continue on doing what we're doing, and we hear footsteps across the ceiling again. We know there's nobody there, but there are people there. So they're so used to us, and we're so used to them now that I don't even hear it anymore. We have a guy that's here who's out in the hall, and he was there with me last night, and he goes, "Did you just hear those footsteps on the roof?" "Oh, yeah, that's just our ghosts." There is, however, one ghost who doesn't like me, and it's my own fault. She's a female, and she's very attracted to our mannequin. Not necessarily the clothing, but the mannequin. And the first time I noticed her, I was just vacuuming, and I kind of got a vacuum, and I stepped into her spot where she was at, and it was like, ooh, it was very cold. And so this was a new feeling. This was a new person that was there, and we had one of our friends come over, and I said, "I need you to come and tell me if you can spot the new person or whatever," and I didn't tell her anything more than that. I didn't talk about hall or anything. She walked over, she walked to the room, she walked around, and she got right to the mannequin, and she goes, "It's female." And I'm like, "Okay, so, female, we know it's a female," and she leaves a cold spot right in front of the mannequin, so if I vacuum, I have to say, "Excuse me." Well, I got into this kind of thing where I would tease her. "Bob's my boyfriend." That's the mannequin, right? And I've always called him that. Is that not? Always. Always called Bob my boyfriend. This is my boyfriend, Bob, and she doesn't like me now. She will let me know if I get too close to Bob. She lets me know. She'll like cold chill. She'll follow me. She was very quiet for a while. And so we started talking about her. We're like, almost like we're gossiping about a ghost. Like, she hasn't been here forever. I don't know what's happened to her. I'm going to go, like, tease her. Like, "Bob's my boyfriend." Walk over, stand by the mannequin, and I was doing that. "Bob's my boyfriend." And she pinched me. She pinched me, and my hair on my arms and neck visibly stood up. And I kept saying it just to see how far I could push it. And the zaps got just a little more painful to the point where I'm like, Okay, I'm sorry, and I like her and moved away, but she came with me to make sure that I was away from that mannequin. So I don't tease her very often anymore. However, tonight, we are going to go over to the museum at 9 o'clock, and we are going to do a live video. I'm hoping our Southern Utah Paranormal Society gets here on time. Otherwise, we'll just do it ourselves. But we're going to do a live stream on Facebook. You guys can stay here and watch it or go home, however you want to do it, starting at 9 o'clock. And we're going to go through the museum, and we're going to show you the energies that are in each room in that museum. And there are many. There are many. So hopefully they show up tonight. I won't be too mean to her. I don't know even what to call her, but I will try to antagonize her a little bit so that she comes out. But we hope you'll join. You can stay here and watch if you want. I think that Dory would like to hear some of your stories.
So we're recording for my podcast tonight. So if you tell your story, you could be on the show. If you do get up and tell a story, I have a release for you to sign afterward. And if you don't want to be used in the show, we will not use you in the show. But yes, I would like to hear your ghost stories. And are we ready?
Yes.
All right. We'll just go straight into it. Neil, you got one?
Yeah.
All right. Come on up. Let's get it started.
Neil Peacock. Woo! He's a handsome man and also my
father. One out of two. Hi, so some of you know who I am, and I apologize in advance. For the last, as best Gwen and I, this is my wife Gwen over here, Dory's mom. Gwen and I have run the Castledale Ghost Tour. Have any of you attended that? Would you raise your hand if you went on the ghost tour? Yeah, thank you. Thank you for coming. This year, we take the money that we raise from the ghost tour and we donate it to a good cause. And this year we're able to donate over $700 to the Emory High Drama Department. And I'm not in the Emory High Drama Department anymore. I retired, so it doesn't benefit me. Gwen and I at all, but we have fun doing it. And I want to tell you about one of the ghosts on that tour. Some of you have been on the tour know about this ghost. For a long time, people had seen a headless ghost in our cemetery. They had seen this headless ghost. And I wondered about that. I wanted to take people up and tell them about the ghost, but I didn't know enough. And I was talking to one of my friends in the sheriff's department, and he said, "Oh yeah, we know who that is." And he told me this story. There was a lady driving on I-70 from across I-70, across the country, but as she was getting about halfway between Salina and Green River, she had to stop and go over by the fence and, I'll use the scientific term, tinkle. And so she was over there tinkling and had a flashlight, and she looked to the side and there was a dead body. And then she didn't have any trouble at all tinkling after that. she drove on into Green River, and as you probably know or may not know, we have a sheriff's substation in Green River. And they went in, she went and found the sheriff and told him about it, and he made her come with him, and they went back out, this deputy, and they went back out to that spot, and there was in fact a body. It was, I don't know, a month or so old. It had been heavily damaged by animals, and he made that a crime scene, and the lady went on her trip, and they gathered up the body and they brought it back in to Castledale. And they put out an all points bulletin, anybody know this person, and they got nothing. And so they decided to contact a person in Wyoming who can use putty and things and reconstruct faces. And so they contacted him, and he said, "Yes, I can do that." So they said, the sheriff said, "Okay, we'll send the body up." And he said, "I don't want the whole body. I don't need the body. I just want the head." So think, the newest member of the sheriff's office, probably, and maybe the first one to quit after that, I don't know, had to go in and cut this lady's head off. And they put it in a styrofoam cooler and duct taped it. Some of you think I might be kidding about this, but the very man, the very deputy sheriff who drove that to Wyoming, his daughter's right here. Can I get an amen, Amanda? Can I get an amen? It's her dad that took it up there. Well, they didn't need the whole body. They had DNA and everything they needed like that. Although back then, if you remember, this is the 1980s, DNA wasn't great yet. Many people thought it stood for the National Dyslexics Association. Think about it. But they did have they did have DNA. And they had this head, and they took it up, and it took months, I believe, for them to reconstruct this face, and then took pictures of it. And then he said, "Come get your head back." In the meantime, they had taken that lady, found a white dress at Goodwill or somewhere, and had put her in a white dress and had buried her in the part of Castledale Cemetery called Potter's Field. Now, I was a mayor for 12 years, and we buried people there for the sheriff's department and indigents, people who couldn't afford to be buried. That's where they're buried. And you can still go there today, and you can look and see a place where there are very, very few headstones in the old part of the cemetery, and that's Potter's Field. And they buried her there. And it wasn't too long after that, some people like to go, especially in the summer, and around dusk or even later, walk up there because there's a lot of crisscrossing roads. And they began to see this lady without a head, and it was very spooky and scary for them. Well, they came back, they put the lady's face out there. Anybody seen her? Nope. Don't know who she is. she is. But there is a ghost without a head wandering around the Castledale Cemetery, I believe, looking for her head. Now, for the ghost tour, we couldn't guarantee that she would come out. In fact, she's a little shy, I think, and only comes out when she wants to. So I just got to tell a funny story. During the ghost tour, my job was to tell stories. My wife Gwen's job is to keep our character actors who are at the different locations safe. And she drives around and keeps them safe and warm and okay. And she had picked up a young man who was at Ghost Road, and he was there to scare people, and he did a good job. But she picked him up and kept him in the truck so he wasn't just out in the elements. And we took another young lady, and we made this great costume, a white dress, and then we had a black face covering. So from a distance, it looked like somebody walking around without a head. And we took her and left her there. And as we'd tell that story in the cemetery, she would come walking out and get closer and closer, and she was pretty creepy. Well, as we left after the second tour, Gwen drove up to check on her. She had this boy in the truck and drove up to check on her and was parked there waiting for us to leave. And as the wagon, as the hayride took off, Gwen sat there and they were watching and watching. And the girl got nervous and nervous and got in her car and took off. And Gwen said, "Oh, I think something's wrong. We better follow her." And so they followed her. And she came right back down to where we start, the starting point, and that's where I was by then. And she came and she said, "You've got to help me." I was up there, and some creepy truck came along, and they were just staring at me, and I didn't know what to do. So I got in my car, and I drove down here as fast as I could, and they followed me. So I tell Gwen that, and Gwen says, "Oh, that was us. We were watching out for it." So it got scarier than it ever needed to. Anyway, that's one of the ghosts that haunts the Castledale Cemetery. So, thanks.
All right, do we have anybody who's ready? Anybody else ready to share? We got one over here. All right, come on up.
So when I first showed up, I didn't think I had a ghost story, and the experience of being here has jogged a memory that I had completely forgotten. I grew up in Maryland, that's where I'm from. I only moved out to Utah for school. And I grew up in a very large house and a very large family without a lot of money to go around, which means I had a lot of old hand-me-down toys, a lot of old hand-me-down clothes, and a lot of messiness in my life, particularly me. I'm a very messy person. And I had just moved into a new room in the house. Enough siblings had moved out that I got to have my own room for the first time. And I promptly made a mess of it, filled it with stuff all over the place. And my parents are both lawyers. And my mom does something called estate law, where she will process an estate. And we had done a couple as a family where we kind of were hired on as the cleaning crew. And part of that deal was that we kind of got first pick of the things that were going to go to the estate sale. So I had put in a few things from this estate sale into my room. They were all over the floor, they were all over everything, and it was November. And it was pretty cold outside, and we had just had kind of our Halloween fun times. And I was in my room, just grabbing something really quick. The room was full of items, toys and things, but something also important to know about my family is we didn't do baby dolls, and we didn't do Barbies. My mom said that she had seen her male cousins terrorize too many Barbies and too many baby dolls to ever want to give them to her daughters. So we didn't have any baby dolls, we didn't have any Barbies. I didn't get any from this estate sale. But I was in my room, which was a total mess, and I stepped down on something that felt like the kind of soft plastic that I knew other people had for their baby dolls' faces. And I stepped and I felt it under my foot, and I heard, "Play with me." And I looked down and I saw like a baby doll, but I knew I didn't have any baby dolls. I knew there were no baby dolls in my house, and I ran out of my room. And I ran and I told my friend Beth, she was visiting me, And she said, well, we're not sleeping there tonight, obviously. And the next day, I kind of mustered up my courage, and I went in there, and I turned on music really loud, so that if something happened, I wouldn't hear it, I wouldn't know. And I cleaned up my room really fast, and I didn't find a baby doll. I didn't find anything, except for some of these items I'd gotten from the estate sale, where there had been things like baby dolls and other toys at the estate sale. And I had left those items on the floor, and I put them up on a shelf, and it never happened again. And that helped me keep my room clean for about 6 months. My room is not clean right now, though.
My brother-in-law is terrified of porcelain dolls. And while he and my sister were house hunting recently, they walked into a house and my sister was like, oh, this is great, perfect size, perfect number of bedrooms, it's in a great area. And they walked into a bedroom full of porcelain dolls. And her husband turned on his heel and walked away. And she was like, you know they're gonna take the dolls with them when you go, when they go, right? And he goes, I will know that they were there. All right, who do we have next? If you're nervous about the recording, just know I will edit you so you sound great. And we won't use anything that you don't. You can come up to me later. Let me know you don't want your story used. Please don't be shy about this right now. Do we have anyone else? Come on up.
Excuse me. So my name is Marcia Melosi, and me and my sisters are kind of what you would consider haunted people. But so I've got lots of stories, but I'm going to tell of a specific one. Around the time that I was, or during the time that I was an undertaker, I was a transport driver for a funeral home. And so during that time, I didn't search the job out. The job found me, and it worked with what I needed at the moment. And I thought to myself, okay, I'll try anything once. I was told there was nothing going to be really invasive. I'm not going to help the funeral director in preparing bodies or anything like that. So I said, okay, and I said a prayer that it would be easygoing first. And so all of the deaths that I helped with, you know, in caring for the person, they were all very peaceful. The individual was older, had cancer, was on hospice, it was expected. And so it was easygoing for like 6-7 months. It was really nice. I thought I could handle this. I could help people through their grief. Maybe this is my calling. And along with picking up individuals in the community, we also have to pick up individuals that have been taken to the medical examiner's office at the North. And so there were a few of those, and although it is morbid, and everything we're talking about is morbid, I found kind of solace in the job of being able to sit peacefully with the spirit of the person that I was helping, because I was helping care for them, and it was generally a peaceful experience. But one night late, I got a phone call for, it was later in the afternoon, but it was going to be late when I got back. But I got a phone call for the medical examiner's office, and I'd been kind of waiting on it. There was a small child that had drowned in one of the national parks. And so we were kind of waiting to see which funeral home was going to get the phone call. And it just so happened that our funeral home did, and that I was on call, and so I had to go and pick the child up. And I wasn't really sure how I felt about it. I hadn't picked up a child before, and so I was kind of nervous and praying the way up, and just trying to calm myself. And I was having like a little panic attack on the way up there, but I get up there and everything is peace and calm. The canyon was fine. That's usually, you know, one of the scariest things for me was the canyon. And there was no heavy weather, no nothing. And I get to the medical examiner's and everything is fine. But the moment I have to pick this child up, everything inside me just says I can't. And the medical examiner that was there was a young woman about my age, and she said, I understand. I've been around them all day. Don't worry, I'll take care of her. And so she picked this little one up and brought it to the van that I had, the transport van. and I was on my way. And the whole occurrence lasted maybe 15 minutes, but suddenly everything in the van shifted and changed. And it felt like I couldn't get home fast enough. And on the horizon, as I was going through Provo, I could see over Spanish, or over the canyon, flashes of lightning. And I thought, oh crap, okay, I'm gonna have to go through this canyon. I'll just take it nice and easy. Driving in inclement weather just is the worst for me, but we'll make it work. And so I'm driving along and there's no rain, but there's lightning flashing everywhere. And the further I get into the canyon, the lightning starts to change color. And all of a sudden, instead of yellow or orange, it's purple and pink. I've never seen purple or pink lightning before, but I kid you not, I will hand on the Bible, I will go to my desk saying this. I saw lavender lightning flashing on both sides of the road. And it was almost like God had given this little one the controls to heaven and was letting her just smash buttons and wiggle toggles. And so it was 1 minute everything would be fine, and then there'd be flashes of lightning. And I'm going through and there's not a speck of rain. And the moment I get to Soldier Summit, the wind starts to blow. And I get over Soldier Summit and I'm headed towards the Schofield turnoff. And the clouds opened up and it started hailing out of nowhere. There was nothing and then there was hail. And then it stopped. It went for a whole and then it stopped. And I slowed down and everyone around me slowed down, but we kept going. And the road just ahead of me was nice and dry. And so I kept driving and I thought, well, that's weird. And I get to the Schofield turnoff and the clouds unzipped again and hail started coming down and I started fishtailing. And I obviously started to freak out, pulled out the car over, and I felt a bucket of ice just come down my body, go down my back, down my legs, and then I felt this little weight sit on my lap. And I'll try not to get emotional. It was a good job. But I felt this little weight sit on my lap, and it felt like I had a little child sitting on my lap. And thankfully, I was pulled over off to the side of the road, but I was just kind of having a conversation with God, saying, is this how I'm going to die? This child was on the news. Am I going to be on the news next? You know, is this how you pick it? Because, wow, this is a way to go. You know, this is something to put on my gravestone. And after a few minutes, I was able to calm down, and I felt the weight on my legs lift and the cold begin to lift. And finally, the heater, like I was able to feel the heater again. And everything, you know, my heart was still racing, but I was able to get back onto the road, and the hail had stopped again. It unzipped and poured for maybe 5 minutes, you know, 7 minutes, enough time for me to fishtail and pull off, and then it stopped again. And then I felt the weight on my lap, and the cold, literally like a bucket of ice, was dropped on me. And I was able to get back on the road and keep going, and I got back to the funeral home, and I was by myself. And that place, while it can be a very welcoming place during a service, it can be a very terrifying place at night. There are so many dark corners, dark hallways, and when I got there, I really desperately did not want to go inside by myself. But I carried this little one inside and got her taken care of and went upstairs to put away the paperwork. And as I'm walking up the stairs, I felt this tug on my jacket that I was wearing. And I kind of reached around and thought, well, maybe I cut it on my phone or my wallet, or that felt really weird. And okay, Marcia, you're freaking yourself out. Let's just get up to the office, go through the dark hallways, flip on all the lights, put the paperwork away, and you'll be fine. And so I get up to the office, get the paperwork put away, and I'm turning to leave the office, and I feel a firm tug on my jacket, but it was waist high. And so I was convinced that her little soul was with me, and for some reason, God thought it would be funny to give her the controls of heaven and let me ride through it. But ever since working with the funeral home, after the experiences I had there, I am convinced that a person's soul stays with them until they are properly send-off. However that send-off is, whether it's cremation, whether it's burial, whether it's a natural burial or whatever, that soul is going to stay with the body, and I'm personally convinced of that until they're taken care of and they actually get to rest in peace. Thank you.
So strange. Oh, so beautiful. I've heard people who work with the dead often say that that's what convinced them about life after death. All right, who's next? You want to go?
Okay. Marcia, I can't go there with you, but I know why that happened to you, and that's because, you know, I had to go to Price to school, and I think that little girl didn't want to go to Price. Who does? She's like, yes. I have to go to Price if I don't have to. I grew up in the auditorium at the high school. And my dad taught theater there and did plays there for all of our lives. And so I grew up there. I grew up at every play practice, hanging out in the auditorium. And there was a ghost called Glenn they always talked about. And I knew that was just a bunch of crap. And so we had always told ghost stories. And my friend Travis and I, when we got into high school, we started working on the stage crew. So now we were spending all the day at high school, and then we'd stay all the night, all through till it was time to go home to have dinner. We would stay at the auditorium, and we would do the lights, we would do the sound. We were part of plays, and so we spent an inordinate amount of time at the high school auditorium. And I remember one day, Travis and I were sitting there. The high school auditorium is freaky because as nice of a building as it is, all of its sound and light equipment is controlled from the middle of the auditorium, which means that when you come into the auditorium, it's pitch black. And you have to walk up, clear into the middle of the auditorium, and go over and turn up the lights. And then you finally get the lights up. And the same, which is fine for me going in, the hard part is leaving, right? Is that anybody else's hard part? So the hard part is going up, it's time to leave. You're like, okay, we're leaving for the night. You go up, you turn off all the lights, and now you've got to walk clear out. And you're blocked by all the seats, so you've only got one track, right? You've got to walk out this way, you've got to go down the stairs, you've got to go in the creepy hallway, and then exit. So Travis and I'll never forget, we're sitting there one night, and we're talking, and I think we'd gone and turned the lights down, and then we started talking to each other at the way, and then all of a sudden we hear voices. We start hearing voices. The voices are coming from the balcony. And how the auditorium is built is that there's a set of stairs that run up one side of the auditorium, and they go up and through one door and then up into a back hallway and up to the sound booths above the balcony. And the same for the other side, but a separate stairwell. And so I remember telling Travis, there's some kids up there, let's go catch them. So we go, he goes takes off one side, and I go taking off up the other side, and we run up there, and we find a bunch of kids up there. We're like, you suckers are caught. We're taking you to Callahan. It was a principal. She was also from Price. So we go up and we get these guys down from there and we take them down to the principal's office and we say, hey, you guys can't come up in the auditorium, you know, just doing that stuff. And so that was kind of a regular occurrence. We didn't have any major problems there. One day Travis and I were sitting there and I remember we turned off the lights and then we were just sitting there talking because, you know, whatever. We're sitting there talking, and all of a sudden I hear those same voices, and I was like, oh, those guys are dead. They're going to Callahan. And so Travis looks at us. We didn't even say anything to each other. He looks at me, and I look at him, and he takes off. There's only these two ways to get up onto this balcony. And so Travis takes off. We already know which ways we're going to go. We've done this a bunch of times. He takes off the one way. I take off the other way. And we run up through there, and there's these twisty hallways before you get to this main long hallway, and it is just cement and pitch black. We didn't have time to go turn on the lights. We're going to catch these kids. And we run up in there, and we come running through that hallway, and we hit right into each other. And then we about pissed our pants. And he said, where are they? And I said, I don't know. And then cold chills run up our spines. And he looked at me and he said, it's time to go. I said, it's time to go. And we took off running together out of there. There was nobody there, but we clearly, just as we had before, could hear the voices, could hear the footsteps, and went charging up there, and that's when I knew that there was stuff in the auditorium that we didn't want to mess with. And that convinced me that day that I wasn't as brave as I thought I was.
I was also on stage crew when I was in high school years later, and my friend Brian came up with a brilliant solution to kids sneaking into the auditorium, which was to put on a ghost face killer mask and a black robe and walk around where anyone might be and pop out of doors. So, he wasn't there that day, though. So, who's next? Who have we got? Coming up. Come on up.
I'm Megan Melberg. I used to work at the museum. Now I work at home for a two-year-old. So, so I have had experiences with, I don't call them ghosts, I call them spirits. Probably my whole life. But a lot of them are at the museum, wherever we are, over there. But I went to the store, this was a year or two ago, and I was like, oh, maybe some ice cream tonight, Friday night, need some ice cream, you know. And I go walking around to get some milk, and there was a lady standing by the ice cream, and I'm like, yes, I have that same idea as you. And she just was staring at the ice cream, and when I said something to her, she went, and looked right at me. And I looked around and I was like, hey, you know, pick a good flavor, because you got a whole bunch of selections there. And I turned to get some milk and I got some eggs and I turned back around, she was gone. And I was like, oh, well, don't follow me home, okay? Because that's what happens. Sometimes they follow me home and then I'm like, okay, why are you here? They always have a purpose. Sometimes it's to comfort, sometimes it's to scare you to death. But yeah, so that's mine. She didn't follow me home, thankfully. I don't think she did, anyway.
At least if she follows you home, she's got ice cream.
A rag, right?
It's a polite ghost. She brings something for the hostess. All right, we have anybody else? Anybody ready to come up? Come on up.
Okay, so I'm Linda Allred. I live in Provo, but I'm Von Reed's daughter. Von Reed is the UFO man. So my story that I'm gonna tell you comes from my son-in-law, who took his own life about 5 years ago, and he and I were very close. He didn't have a good upbringing with his parents, and so when he married my daughter, he and I got very close, and he always teased me relentlessly, just relentlessly, and his name is Adam. And Adam still teases me relentlessly. But this was shortly, he died in June, and this was in December. And I'm one of those people that everything's always over-decorated. And I always put up garland with the drapes, and then the big red bows between. And in the house that I was living in at the time, we had a hot corner. And Adam used to tell me, that's a portal. And I was like, nah, because he was always very sensitive himself. And he said, no, you watch grandbabies. They're scared of that corner. And he was right. So I had plugged in this garland. I'd only used it 1 year before. Hung up the garland and turn on the lights. Three drapes do not light. I'm livid. Now, my daughter that had been married to him had two little boys that they shared. And so I'm not putting things together yet, and I'm looking at this garland and I'm angry and I'm pissed that now I have to do something about it. So I run to Walmart, buy new garland, buy new lights. I get home, don't have time to put it up before the family dinner. So the kids come and they say, Mom, you should turn on the lights. So no, because there's three drapes that are not coming on. Well, did you check the lights? Yes, and it doesn't make sense because the strand of lights starts on that wall and ends about 4 feet that way of the third drape. I says, it doesn't matter. I've got new garland. I'm going to put it up tomorrow. And so then we're just talking and playing with the kids. And these two little boys who are, I don't know, 4 and 6, are start talking about Daddy and how they love Daddy and how they miss Daddy. And but we're also telling funny stories. But as we're talking about Daddy, all the rest of the lights are on, but those three drapes flickers, and then they all come on, all three of them. And I looked at my daughter, and she's just stunned. And I said, that's a sign from your daddy that he's still with you, and he still loves you so very much. But that's my story. Just Adam, and he still teases us relentlessly with TVs and dish towels and everything else, but that was what I wanted to share.
Those are my favorite kinds of stories to hear. I like when our loved ones come back to visit us. All right, anybody else ready to go? Okay, Jaden, you got
somebody else.
I didn't see any of their hands. Come on up. It was the Peacock Family show tonight, you guys. Sorry.
I also have had a lot of experiences in my life, and I shared a lot of them on Ghostbox. So if you want to hear other ones, then go listen to Ghostbox. But this is one I haven't shared on Ghostbox. So, I met my husband. I didn't know he was going to be my husband at the time, but he was in a punk rock band in Price, Utah. And there was only 2 punk rock bands, and I was friends with both groups of these boys. And they would practice in my friend's, our mutual friend's basement. And his name was Dave. And before I went there, my someday husband would say to me, listen, Dave's house is weird. And I was like, okay, well, a lot of people's houses are weird, I guess. That's rude to say, but okay. And he's like, no, but like, maybe just like, and he's trying to be cool. We kind of liked each other. He's trying to be cool. But he's like, maybe just like say a prayer in your heart before you go to Dave's house. I was like, it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. All right. Before we go and listen to really inappropriate rock music, absolutely, let's say a little prayer in our hearts. And I get in there, and it's a nice house. Mike was like, full of crap. That's my husband. Full of crap. It was beautiful, well-decorated, warm. And I was like, yeah, okay, well, this was bizarre. But we go down to the basement. Still fine. It's set up with tons of equipment and tons of guitar stuff. And they start practicing a little bit. We're goofing around and talking. And I hear footsteps up the stairs. And then onto the ceiling, right? Just like across his kitchen floor. And I was like, Dave, he's like the youngest of 11 kids. And they're all grown. But I'm like, who's home? And he's like, no one's home. And I was like, but what about that? And he looks at me and says, we don't talk about it. I was like, we don't. And he's like, we don't talk about it. I was like, okay. So they start playing, and then like you're running back and forth. And I was like, hey, but Dave, you know, like upstairs, I can kind of, and he goes, we don't talk about it. And his friend laughs and says, like, yeah, he doesn't talk about it. And I was like, okay, things are strange. Well, I go home, but we do this all the time. Every weekend I'm over there listening to them play, listening to them practice. And the next time, I hear somebody open the door and come in, and I hear like those footsteps, you know, and like a little creak on the floor, and I know who it is. It's Joy, his mom, who everybody thought was just the meanest substitute, and you come in and she's the nicest lady you'll ever meet in your entire life. And I was like, your mom's home, I gotta go talk to Joy. And Dave's like, my mom's out of town. And I said, but I heard her, and he goes, we don't talk about it. I was like, oh, we don't talk about it. And Mike looks at me and was like, Did you say the prayer? And I was like, I did not say the prayer. So, anyway, time goes by, and I keep asking him about it, and he keeps telling me we don't talk about it, and it just becomes one of these things. Every time we're down in the basement, we hear running, we hear walking, we hear slamming doors, and one time I hear the cupboards and they are opening, shutting. And I said, Dave, do you think we should go up? And he goes, nope, I don't think we should go up. I don't think we talk about it. And I said, Dave, how long have you lived here? And he's like, my whole life. And I go, and? And he goes, and we don't talk about it. And he's looking at me like, how do you not get this yet? Like, are you stupid? And I'm like, are you stupid? There's like something clearly going on upstairs. Anyway, he finally pulls me aside and he's like, Jane, I know you're curious, but like, and I know it's kind of like become a joke, but we really shouldn't. When we talk about it, things get bad. And that just makes me want to talk about it a little bit more. Because I'm like, what kind of bad are we talking about? And I don't take his advice. I keep talking about it. I talk to Mike about it. I try to talk to Dave about it, who will not. And in the meanwhile, some more people join the band. There's a new drummer. There's a new guitar player. And they think it's hilarious. And so we were talking about it one day, and I go to leave. There wasn't anything I heard that day, so I was like, not a big deal. And his house is kind of set back. It's in the middle of a cul-de-sac, and they have a huge, area to park their trailer. And so it's all gravel. So they have, like, a little bit of lawn, but then just a huge amount of gravel. And I go to get in my car, and I hear, like, shuffling, that shuffling in the gravel sound. And I was like, well, that's weird, and I know nobody's not here, and I walk outside and I feel that feeling, just heavy in the air and chills on my back. And I'm like, I didn't talk about anything. I didn't talk about one thing today. And I was like, I'm gonna go to my car. And then I remember what Mike said. And I was like, okay, now I'm also praying in my heart. So, and I'm saying this, and all of a sudden I get the feeling of a run. And I start running. It's about half a block to my car. And I start running and I hear somebody tear off in the gravel running after me. And then I realized, oh my gosh, this isn't some stupid ghost. There is like a person out here that is going to get me, that has been hiding in the back, and he is going to grab me. And I feel that feeling when I'm running of somebody about to grab my hair like this. And as soon as I tap on my car, nothing is there. There is no person. There's nothing chasing me. But I could feel that thing. And I got in my car, and I did say a prayer, and I drove to Mike's house, and I cried. And it took me a few months before going back to Dave's, and I wouldn't go there at night anymore. But it was daytime a few months later, and they were going to practice. And I was like, okay, well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to talk about this anymore. And we go down to the basement, and the other kids are having a laugh, and they are teasing Dave about his ghost. And he looks mortified, and I'm not saying a damn word. And then they start turning on the distortion. And they turn down the lights, and they turn up the guitars, and they turn on the distortion. And one of the friends gets on there and starts making total fun and saying, like, Satan is my friend, Satan is my pal. And they're joking around. And all of a sudden, I see a light in the bathroom, but the lights didn't turn on. And I run to the bathroom, and the candle had lit itself. And I just noped right out. Nope, I'm done. And the next time we got together to practice, all of those kids, we heard running upstairs. And it freaked everyone out. There was a bass guitarist almost in tears. And the drummer who was like trying to pretend nothing happened but terrified. The next time we got there to practice, a few weeks later, we heard running up above us. And everybody looked up and everybody shut their mouths. And Dave said, exactly, don't talk about it. And we never did again. And I went to that house for like 2 more years, but nobody ever talks about it again.
Interestingly, Jane and Brian had a similar strategy with me. No, just kidding. Who we got? Is anybody else ready? Anybody ready to come up? Oh, in the back, come on up. I'll sing a little song one more time.
My name is Kim Turner, and my family and I have always kind of had sensitivity to spirits or ghosts, things like that. I'm going to talk a little bit about an experience that happened to me when I was about 14 or 15 years old. And we lived in Cleveland, and my mom and dad's home was a trailer that was situated on the old roadbed from the road that used to go from Cleveland to Huntington, not the one that's there now, but it's up on the hill. And for some reason, all of us didn't like the back bend. I don't know why. But the trailer was situated kind of this way, north and south, east and west, and the big bathroom was down that hallway. And so every time anybody would come out of that bathroom, day or night, lights on or lights off, it didn't matter, run up the hall, because something was back there, and you could feel that there was something there that wanted to get you for whatever reason. You know, when you're a child, you think, oh, it's going to get me. But that feeling was always present there in that room. And one year, it was summer, and I was, there were cabinets there by the wall so you could look down the hallway. And I was leaning down to get under the cupboard to grab some cereal. I think it was cereal or soup, I don't know. But as I leaned down and I looked down the hallway, I saw a little boy running up the hall toward me. And he wasn't really looking at me or aware of me in any way, but he was, you know, maybe 6, 7 years old. And he had blood on his face and his upper body. And he was wearing a pair of overalls, and they weren't Levi overalls like, you know, you see now. They were kind of just more like cotton, and they were blue. And I could see his face, and I don't know if I was seeing something. I felt more like I was watching something happen again. One of those kind of situations than really like, you know, a ghost trying to bother you. And it was just kind of, it made me wonder what his story was. You know, what kind of thing had happened to him and why he looked like that and why he was running. And so I wondered all the years if maybe there had been an accident on the old roadbed. I'd even looked it up and tried to see if I could find some record of anything happening in that area. But things like that happened at our house quite a bit. And I just wanted to share that with you guys.
That is scary. I haven't heard many bloody ghost stories. That's terrifying.
Yeah, I'd like to know what had happened. But...
yeah, if anybody knows, hit us up. All right, who have we got next? Come on up.
So I'm Lisa, and Von Reed is also my father, and he's the UFO guy. Yeah, if you don't know where that's at, you should really check it out. It's kind of cool. But I live with Linda and her husband in our family home that my dad helped build a large portion of it. And this last spring, we had one of our sisters come out from Georgia. And she's about 2 days away from having to get back on her plane to head back home. And she goes to find her wallet. Now, before this, we had been talking about Adam and all the things that he does in the house. He'll put the towel in the sink and turn the water on. He's lifted boxes up and thrown them off the table before. So Adam's pretty active at our house. And she was kind of balking about it. And she wasn't really sure. And she made the comment the night before, "I hope he doesn't like to mess with me. I don't want any part of that." So the day comes that I'm talking about, 2 days before she's got to get on her plane, and we're getting ready to go somewhere. She needs her wallet. She can't find it. She had put it in her pants. Couldn't find it. So Linda goes in and she's scouring the room, which is pretty much empty. It's just kind of a guest room. We go through the drawers, go through her clothes, go through her luggage. Can't find the wallet anymore. We go through the car. We look outside where maybe we had walked and she had dropped it. Nowhere. And Linda starts saying, "Adam, I know you moved her wallet. She needs the wallet. Are you going to give it back?" And my sister's over here like, "I need my wallet. Adam, I don't even know how to communicate to you, but I need my wallet." And I go in and I search the room. I go through all the drawers. About 4 hours later, we had been outside, and Linda had made the comment, "Adam, we're all outside. Just put the wallet back." And then she went in for something, and she comes back out. She She's got the wallet. It was in a drawer of the dresser that I had looked at. My sister Amy had looked through. Linda had looked through 4 times. It was laying right in the middle. The only other thing that was in there was a little teddy bear. We couldn't have missed it. My sister Amy goes, "Well, Adam, that was a good job. But I think I'm going to keep my wallet on my person at all times now." So that's my story about Adam. Thank you.
You want, ghost, don't mess with my stuff. Don't touch my stuff. A couple years ago, I had a roommate that told me there was a male presence hanging out in our hallway. I had just adopted a cat, and every night my cat would zoom up and down the hallway, and he would stare at something like this. And I stood in my hallway and said to the ghost, "I don't care what you do. I don't care if you're here. Leave my freaking cat alone." And then I realized there was a bug stuck in our light fixture, and that wasn't what the cat was doing. He was fine. He was fine the whole time. So, anybody else ready? How much longer do we want to go? It's about 7:30. Do I have a time, Megan?
I will find out.
Okay. Anybody else ready to go? Oh, we got one back here. We got one right here. So let's go. Do.
Okay. I'm Jacqueline Jeffs. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So. My stories kind of revolve around the temple. So we moved into a house about 13 years ago, just down here by the rodeo ground. And my father-in-law had said, "Your ancestors used to live in this house. It used to be a log cabin, and they kind of built up around it." And I'm like, "Oh, cool, whatever." And then my husband's grandma, so lived a couple doors down. We would go down there and visit her every day, and she's like, "Your house used to be the party house." And I'm like, she's like, so I guess Annie Clausen used to live there, and it was my father-in-law's aunt, Annie, and she said she was a very elegant lady. She had a chandelier in the front room. Like, this house is small. Like, I don't know. She had a chandelier. In the bathroom, she had a clawfoot tub, like, very classy lady, and she said it was the party house. Everybody went there. There was music playing all the time. Everybody had a good time. And I was like, "Oh, okay." And when I moved in, I've always been prone to spirits my whole life. I can feel them, but me and Heavenly Father, we have an agreement. I will not see them. I choose not to see them. I can feel them, and I know if they're good or bad. I know whether to run. I know whether to not turn down that road in my car. So, I was getting ready to go to the temple. I was by myself, and I meet my parents are from Christ. They were coming and meeting me at BK's in Huntington, so I was driving to Huntington. I got around the curb right out of Castledale by Stewart's and realized I forgot my temple bag, so I turned around, went back to the house, and it was summertime, and my windows were open, and in our bedroom, it's right by the back door where we go in by the garage, and so I was like, "I'm going to make this quick, I'm going to be late," so I'm running up to the back steps to get in, and I hear a party going on in my house, like through the window. And I'm like, I didn't have any kids yet. My husband was at work, and I'm like, "I don't understand this. What is happening? Did I leave my radio on?" But it was loud, and it was like joyful, laughter, talking, music, but it was kind of like old-fashioned music. And as soon as I turned the door handle, opened the door, everything went silent in my house. And I've had experiences where I'll be getting out of the shower and I'll hear a man's voice, "Hey!" And it sounds like my father-in-law, and I'm like, "I'm here!" And then nobody's there.
Just kidding. We got another hand back here. Let's have you come on up. We'll just keep it going.
Sorry. However long you guys want.
Okay.
All right. My name's Mindy. I grew up in a town called Emory. So, after my grandparents died, my mom was taking care of their house, and we just couldn't do two houses, so we moved into their house. And it's an old house. Like, my grandparents remodeled it, and so the attic was like a redone attic, like where you can sleep and all that. And the stairs were really steep and kind of wore off. So, like, weird stuff started to happen when I was little. Like, my TV, I moved there when I was, I think, in sixth grade. So, like, the TV would be shut off,
I am so nervous that I can't even do that.
So, and then we hear, like, people running up and down the stairs. And my brothers were in the room kind of next to me. And so that just kind of went on, and it was normal. I wasn't scared or anything like that. And so then my brother was on shift work, and this thing ghost would run up and down the stairs, run down the hallway, do all that. And he's like, I think it's a little kid. I'm like, okay, it's just somebody playing and whatever. So time goes on, I'm in high school. My then husband, Zach, was my boyfriend. And we were watching movies, and we could hear the footsteps. And he's like, what is that? And I'm like, oh, it's just our ghost. And he's like, what? I'm like, it's just our friendly ghost. So then I got married, and the Simonsons own this house. And they still, family still lived in Emory. So I talked to her, and her name is Beth. And she died of appendicitis on the kitchen table. And this was, like, way back. And so, you know, we just named her Beth. We didn't mess with her. We let her play, turn off the lights, do all that. Well, my dad passed away in the house, and my mom got remarried. We didn't tell him. And so one night, he heard footsteps coming down the stairs, and the door opens to the stairs, and there's a hallway that goes into their bedroom. And the moon was full. And he sees her walk into the bedroom, and she lifts up the covers, and she gets in bed with him, like a comfort thing. So anyways, we don't live there anymore, but it's still there.
I don't know if you guys realize this, but Emory is the most haunted place in the county. I don't know what it is, if there's like a ley line there or something. But every house in Emory is haunted, especially the ones close to the old church. If you want to hear a story about the old church, there's one on my podcast. Who else wants to go? They said we have as long as we want. Let's see if we can get a couple more stories. Anybody else that's kind of been dying to come up? We got one out here. Come on in.
All right. Hello, I am Jeff. I'm one of the helpers with the museum. I am originally from Salt Lake. I went to high school, junior high up there, and me and my friends were in junior high and high school. A couple of my older friends had driver's licenses, and we wanted to do like the ghost hunting thing, and so we decided to get camcorder and go around doing all that stuff, and we kind of thought it was like all just a joke and never really took it seriously or anything. And there's a hotel in Salt Lake. I don't know if it's still there, but it was the Shiloh Inn, and I think it was like late 70s, like early 80s, but there was like a murder or suicide there. And like six children were thrown off of like the 11th story. And like one of the children like actually jumped, like some of the older children jumped. I don't remember the whole story of that. It was a little before my time. But so the whole hotel is supposed to be haunted. And we're like, all right, let's go get into that hotel and figure it out, and like it's kind of quasi-legal means that we got into the hotel. Like, they had this big glass elevator that takes you up there. We're like, all right, let's go to the 11th floor. And we're with four of us. And two of my friends got caught by security going in. And me and my other buddy, we made it past and got in the elevator. We go up to the 11th floor. And we're like, all right, this is cool. We're going to go see what's going on. And we start heading down towards the room. And it's the weirdest thing to describe. Like, we were just kind of doing it, like, joking around. Like, didn't really think anything of it. But, like, the way the hotel's set up, it's most hotels, it's a big hallway all the way through it, you have, it's a big square basically. And so we get out the elevator and stuff, and we start walking around towards the room, and both of us kind of started feeling uneasy, and kind of like, aside from the fact that we weren't supposed to be there, like it just kind of had this eerie, creepy feel to it. And we start walking down this hallway, and we walked for what felt like 5 minutes, and we never turned a corner, not once. And all of a sudden we're both back at the elevator, and we're kind of like looking at each other like, what just happened? And like it was kind of goofy. Like that was one of the things. Like there was, like we kind of like boogied out of there after that. But like that's kind of weird. We just kind of hit the elevator button, got back down. We're like, that really just happened. And a couple weeks later, we decided that we want to go check out the children's hospital that used to be up there. And up in by the Capitol, they used to have this huge hospital. It was like five or six stories, and I don't remember how old the hospital was, but they, I mean, it was basically like medieval treatments. They had a lot of orphans and stuff, and there was a section of the hospital where they had a lot of kids that were just, didn't have parents, that just abandoned them, and they were sent there to die, basically. And we were able to sneak into that hospital. It was completely condemned and stuff, and so, you know, we're wandering the hallways and stuff. And we get down kind of to the lower levels and stuff, and there's children's beds still in there, there's crutches, there's wheelchairs, it's already kind of creepy, there's no power. There is security guards there, but they kind of more or less just watch for people parking around there. You know, so we're basically alone, and, like, we swear, like, we started hearing, like, somebody else, like, footsteps walking towards us, dunk behind us, you know, and so we're starting to, like, walk faster, you know, like, okay, maybe we should get out of here, it could be security and stuff. And so we tried to find our way back on how we got in. We had to go through this window that was open, again, quasi-legal. There were no signs, but the window was open. And so we get into this room, which we thought it was where we came in, and there was a TV that was on there, like those old big, huge TVs, and it was just sitting there with a little fly screen on there, like buzzing. And, like, we thought there was no power in the place. But that's when we decided, like, okay, we're going to get out through another window, and we got out of there as fast as we could. And that's kind of when we kind of stopped messing around with that stuff. We're like, maybe we shouldn't do this anymore, you know, because I don't think we were really respectful about it and stuff. So, like, ghost hunting kind of thing, it puts me kind of on edge doing it just because I have done stuff like that where I've gone and searched for that kind of thing, and it did make me feel uncomfortable. And I kind of feel that there are some things that you can't explain. And, yeah, that's kind of my story. But, yeah, there's some creepy stuff in Salt Lake aside from the people.
Push off the Shiloh Hotel lift.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's a spooky place. Like,
it is.
Weird.
I have a very, like, stringent don't screw with the occult policy. I don't ghost hunt. I'll let other people do it and then come tell me about it. Do we have anyone else who wants to go? I think if we... Oh, April, you got one? Come on.
Amanda,
take it. I will never keep you and your mom's name straight. Come on up.
I'm an elementary school teacher. I teach little kids. And back when I first had my three little babies, I lived at home and I wanted to do a preschool. So we converted our garage into a preschool. And when I had all of my preschool kids in there, they would have to use the bathroom. They'd have to go through my house, down my hallway to go use the restroom. And on the other side of my preschool wall was my living room, and I have a piano that's there in my living room. And one day, as I was teaching preschool, I had about eight little kids. I could hear my piano playing on the other side of the wall. And I'm like, one of the kids has gone out, used the restroom, and it's in there pounding on my piano. And I got counting all of my kids, and I'm like, no. And so I ran out into my living room, and nobody was in there. It's like, well, that was really weird. So I go back in to my preschool, and my son, who was three at the time, comes up and he's like, Mom, will you go with me to the bathroom? I'm like, it's your house. Just go down the hall. It's right by your bedroom. Go down the hall. It'll be right there. And he says, I don't want to, Mom. I says, well, how come? And he's like, because I'm scared. I'm like, well, what are you scared about? He says, because I see things that you don't, Mom. And I went, and I got goosebumps because that had just happened not long before, and okay, I'll come with you. And so I went down to the hall, and he never would go down there. It wasn't just a day thing. He never would go by himself. But unlike most of you, I feel a lot of things. Sometimes I hear things, like busy rooms. I'll hear voices, just a whole bunch of them, and then all of a sudden I'll be quiet. But I feel a lot of things, and I think he's the same way. And so he feels things as well. And this part of the story, I don't share a lot with people because if you talk about it, it's one of those things, you don't talk about it. So I just had my daughter, and I was in my bedroom, and I was asleep, and she was in a bassinet right next to me. And my husband was in my boys' rooms. They were little, and they were having a hard time sleeping, so he's in a different room. And I had fallen asleep, and I was having a nightmare. And in this nightmare,
it's kind of hard to explain, but I slowly started coming to realizing that I was having a nightmare, and I woke up, like, suddenly, like, oh my gosh, and I look over at my door to my bedroom, and there was, I couldn't see anything, but I could definitely feel something, and it rushed towards me and paralyzed me that I couldn't move, I couldn't scream, and I was there for about 10 seconds, terrified, not being able to do anything. And then it finally, like, starts lifting. I could kind of feel it lift and then leave. And I started laying there like, what happened? And all of a sudden, I started getting goosebumps again and feeling it coming back. And I bolted out of the room, ran to my husband. I'm like, you've got to come back in my room with me. I can't stay there by myself. And I was just really confused about this. Like, this has never happened to me before. What is going on? So I start talking to my mom about it, and she says, you know, I think it's a heredity thing because it happened to her when she was younger, and it happened to her mom when she was younger. So I think it's something that's kind of been passed on. And that's happened to me probably a good handful, about 5 times, where I wake up suddenly and it rushes toward me. But I feel if you don't talk about it, if it doesn't happen, you just pretend like it's not there. I mean, it doesn't happen, but we moved out of the house, didn't have any weird experiences in my other house, but we ended up moving back to that same house, blessed the house, haven't had any weird experiences that way, but yeah, it's kind of crazy, creepy, weird, but there you go.
Scary, bless your houses. If you take one thing away from tonight, bless your houses. All right, who else? We got anyone before we close it up? Okay, it looks like we are out of stories, so we're going to close it up. Have a great night. And Tiffany, anything you want to say before we go? All right, we'll turn it over to Tiffany, everybody.
Thank you for listening. As always, The Ghost Box is written, produced, hosted, and all the stuff by me, Dory Peacock, with scoring, mixing, and mastering by Parker B. Abeg, who also composed our nifty theme tune. Special thanks, as always, to our furry, four-legged production assistant, George Musington Adams, Esquire, because of course my kitty cat is a lawyer. Yes, he is a tiny, fluffy lawyer. And special thanks on this episode to Colin, who acted as our roadie and production assistant and just the overall great guy who helped with everything on this episode. Thank you to everyone at EC Paracon, especially Tiffany Baker and the crew at the museum and at the county building. Thank you, everybody, for inviting me. Thank you, everybody, who shared your stories. As always, the Ghost Box has a patreon.com account. Patreon is a nifty website that allows you to support small independent creators like yours truly. Go to patreon.com/theghostbox, and if you would like to help support the show, toss a coin in the box, as they say. You can donate at the level that suits your financial needs, and in exchange for your small monthly donation, you will get access to bonus content, including extra stories from episodes, monthly Q&A live streams, a special Patreon sticker, a little shout out on the pod. This week's shout out goes to Feller, who signed up at our $20 patron level, and so much more. As always, if you like this episode, you can rate and review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you didn't like this episode, well, what more? What more can I do for you, minions of the internet? Just kidding. Thanks again for listening. Stay spooky, everybody.